Hello and welcome back to the Thundersticks podcast. I am your host, Ben Kreider, and today I am going to be talking about Alexei Pokuševski and Teo Maledon and how they played against the Charlotte Hornets last night. I'm also going to be talking about Jalen Horde in there as well, and I'm going to be previewing the next game against the Cleveland Cavaliers. So getting right into yesterday's game against the Hornets, this is something that I've stressed probably the last 2 or 3 days. But when you're looking at that Hornets roster, the way it was shaped last night was perfect. This was probably the best matchup we've had in a while because they didn't have three key players. LaMelo Ball is out for the rest of the year. Gordon Hayward, he's going to be gone a while. And Malik Monk was not playing in this game. He's a guy who has kind of shot up in the past season. So three guys that are pretty big. They needed players to step up in order for any kind of success with them. And with our team, I mean, we've just been plagued with injuries. Everyone has the injury bug on this team, especially the starters. SGA, Dort, Bazley, Horford's not there. You don't have Isaiah Roby. Josh Hall is not playing either. Mike Muscala's not there. That's already seven names. And you had Kenrich Williams, who entered this game. He started, but he had to walk to the locker room, you know, in the fourth quarter of the last game for like a left ankle sprain. So that you got to kind of take that into account as well. So both sides were really just hurt, you know, a lot of key pieces gone. And this kind of had the inklings of the last three games for the Thunder. Hornets got on an 8-0 run to start the game. They had 32 points in the first quarter alone. But Oklahoma City, they were actually able to kind of recollect themselves, and it was through one man, Pokuševski. He hit 1-3 after another. In the first quarter alone, he had 4 made threes, 4 of 4 for 12 points, and he almost had 14 because he ended up getting a rebound, went the whole 94 feet of the court, like weaving through defenders and all that. Jaden McDaniels, he's like a 6'10", pretty lanky guy. Kind of compare him to Poku. Not really, though. He's like 190, 6'10", 6'11". So he's camped under the paint. And Poku, we've seen him fly on these one-handed dunks. So he had a full head of steam going at the basket. And he just went soaring right at McDaniels, kind of collided into him. Really close to capping off a posterizer dunk. The refs, they called it a charge, so pretty weak. You know, when you got a posterizing dunk, just let it go, you know. But they called it a charge, so it wouldn't have mattered. But he blew the dunk. He, like, hit it too strong, back iron. And then he kind of went falling to the ground. So took him a little bit to get up. He said it was his hip that was a little bit out of shape there. Took him a sec to kind of recollect himself, but it honestly didn't matter because that first quarter he had was amazing. Really lifted the team and gave them some sort of chance entering the second quarter. And in the second quarter, they found two young guys as well who could really lift them up. And they got their first lead in the first 3 minutes because Jalen Horde and Justin Robinson, the new additions, they combined for 10 points in the first 5 minutes of the period. And Jalen Horde, he killed it. I mean, he had 7 of those 10 points just going inside for layups. Really good at getting foul calls. So he had an and one in that span as well. But they were very, very solid, helping to kind of prop them up for a little bit. They end up slipping away from that leading spot, though. They were down 5, 56 to 51 by halftime. Main reason of this, turnovers. They had 11 turnovers. They were trying to get everybody involved, which is a good thing, but sometimes it can lead to some issues just like that. When it came to shooting percentages, really just deadlocked. I almost would give the edge to the Thunder in that period, but they were just coughing up way too many extra possessions, led to more Hornets opportunities, and led to 5 more points. And in that second half, started just how you would think. Poku hits his 5th 3. He kept going. Over and over again, he had 7 3-pointers made by the end of the third quarter, had 25 points. That's already a career high for him. And the Thunder were still down. They were down 8 points, 85-77. Really wild there. And Poku, you know, it wasn't just catch and shoot threes. Like, he was going right inside to the basket. He actually parted two Charlotte Hornets defenders going inside and actually got a pretty sweet finger roll layup in there. So he was kind of changing up how he was playing. And the Hornets, I mean, they can't really stop him. 7 feet. You've heard from David Blatt that he's closer like 7'1.5". I almost want to take his word for it because just look at him. He is tall. And then his wingspan listed as 7'3". I don't know. That's also one where you kind of want a measurement. You want to be there in person to see it. But, I mean, he's lengthy. There was no stopping him. Didn't score in that fourth quarter, though. They had one other guy that really led the ammunition, though. Théo Maledon in that fourth. Saving grace for the team. He had 14 points in that quarter alone. 5 of 8 from the field. Got himself 25 points. But the craziest part about all of that, it still was not enough. The Charlotte Hornets, they kind of had some bench guys like in Brad Wanamaker kind of helping them out a lot. So some surprising heroes for them, but they did a great job closing out the game. So even though the Thunder were putting up amazing stats and it was really just an offensive battle in that fourth quarter, they just could not close it out. So the Charlotte Hornets won this game by 11 points, 113-102. With the loss, the OKC Thunder dropped to 20-31. That is a tie with the Toronto Raptors for the 7th best odds in the lottery. Good news on that front, though. Toronto looks like they're signing Kem Birch once he clears waivers. That's going to be a center that they very much need, so that might help in the ensuing kind of tank race that we might be putting our name in. But then for the Hornets, I mean, they are looking really good, actually. They broke away from the Atlanta Hawks to get the 4th seed in the Eastern Conference. They're 26-24 right now. I think if you put them in the West, they're a play-in team. I don't even know if they'd be like 7-10. But they would not be slotted in a safe position right now. Just barely over 500. You still got that major discrepancy between the two conferences. But for a team like us who, you know, we don't mind right now playing the top level of competition, it's probably a good thing that we're playing out in the Western Conference anyways. But just going back to this game, really just some surprising figures for both sides on who was dominating. For the Charlotte Hornets, their mainstay was Jaden McDaniels. This is a guy who was playing in the G League last year. I think he was on a two-way contract. Just didn't really have much breathing room in the system. But they let him loose in this game. He got the start, and he killed it. He had 21 points for a career high, 9 of 14 from the field, and went 3 of 6 from downtown. Just looks like KD. I mean, looks like that Brandon Ingram KD type when they were younger, just really like stocky, not a lot of muscle to them. But yeah, he was able to get his jump shots off really at ease, so that helped him out a ton. All 5 of their starters had double-digit points as well, so really just an even coding there. But McDaniels was really the prominent figure for them. For the Oklahoma City Thunder, though, the two rookies have looked so great this month, and this is by far probably their best games. You can make the case that against the Suns, Maledon probably did a little bit better. And you know what? I'd give you that. But just based on the circumstances of this game, where it was actually kind of close for certain parts of it, and you had a real tag team like the entire time, like one person would have a shift of taking over the game, then it'd result over to the other one. It was really fun to watch. So I'd probably rank it probably higher than the Phoenix Suns game in terms of entertainment. I just think both of them played just amazing. But you got to start with Alexei Pokuševski. 25 points on 9 of 14 shooting. 7 of 11 from downtown. And he broke Maledon's record he set against the Brooklyn Nets. I believe it was in February where he hits 6 of 6 threes. Poku gets one better with the 7, so he locks up that rookie franchise record for the moment. And he also set an NBA record. Youngest player ever to have 7 three-pointers made in a game. 19 years old, 102 days is what you're looking at with him. I know when you read into the details, it's like, why does it matter? This is just the nerdy stat stuff. So he beat out the leader for just a couple of months in LaMelo Ball. Whenever he got this, he was 68 days older than Poku currently was. So 19 years, 170 days, I think it was. So he took that away. So he has got himself an NBA record and a franchise record. And seeing how the draft system works, where there's not really like any players just entering straight out of high school, he's probably going to be pretty safe because there's not a lot of people entering the draft or at least playing in their games at 19 years, 102 days old anyways. So that might be a mainstay in the record books for a very long time. That's going to be a trivia question later down the line. But yeah, he was just a freaking flamethrower. Nobody was stopping him. His crosshairs were just locked on to that rim the entire game. And even the Hornets head coach, James Borrego, he had to give props to him. He said that he was just a major problem. There was like no way of them stopping him. Obviously, I'm paraphrasing. But have you seen his release? Like, he gets the ball off very high and he gets the shot off relatively fast. So closing out on him is a difficult task in general. But closing out and also making an impact on that shot, It's really just a mission for just one play on his own. He's pretty much playing shoot around over like little dummies in front of him because there's really nobody out here rejecting his shots or doing anything wild like that. So he just got in sync one after the other. I don't blame Borrego and the Hornets for having trouble against him because I don't think you can stop Pokuševski when he kind of gets into his zone. And it wasn't just from the threes like I was talking about. He was still getting inside, almost got that deadly poster on Jaden McDaniels. And it's wild. You know, this is something that I've seen all over social media, but it's totally true. Like, this is a guy that in December, in January, we were just happy to see on the floor. Like, he was kind of checking the boxes as like a Kyle Singler player, almost, where you're really pumped to see him get into the game and you just want to see him make a shot. Like, he, to start out the year, I think he couldn't make a three for like the first five-ish games. Like, there was a gigantic cold streak. It was either he was missless or I think he was shooting like 4%. It was in the single digits. But he went from that kind of player where you're just watching him chuck up shots, having a good time regardless of the outcome, to now you're looking at him expecting him to drop double-digit points. And in this case, drop 25 points in a game. You already got that bar set up like he's Kevin Durant as a rookie. So I don't think we've seen that kind of progression from anybody to come through the Thunder system like ever. You know, his rise has been absolutely insane. You know, it has not been gradual by any means. It was just complete like stagnation whenever he came back from the Orlando bubble. That's probably where he ended up picking up some of his good habits, but he's just been on a complete different level since returning. It's something that everybody has been preaching about, but yeah, I mean, Poku, he's been deadly, man, and I'm probably going to do an episode in this week, you know, whenever we have one of our off days, because I know it's one of those more in-depth things that I might not be able to get out with everything in today's episode, but I'm kind of thinking of just giving my projections on where I would see him later down the road and like what his potential could be. Also, the discussion between him and Darius Bazley, I've also seen it discussed on social media on like, you know, where they would place. So I think that's something fun I could talk about. Same goes with re-ranking the draft classes. There's so much fun stuff I can do with the rookies on the roster. So that's Poku, one of them. let's talk about Maladone. Him getting his 25 points, he did a little bit differently. Whereas Poku, he was just shooting three after three. Maladone, he tried replicating that success, but there was just not a lot of it. He shot 3 of 10 from outside, so just as usual. I mean, he always finds a way, whether it's working in the mid-range, getting in the pick and roll to find his spots. He's going to do it, and he is going to make sure by the end of the game, he's a positive spot on the team. He's looked like that every single game. There really has not been a cold moment for him. And when there is, he plays it off, so you can't even remember that. I don't have a recollection of him being bad. So he shot 3 of 10 from 3. That's all right, you know. That's not terrible on paper. You'd want it higher. Inside, though, shot 6 of 9, just working on the Charlotte Hornets defense. When you get a screen set for him, you already know. We saw it in his preseason game against the Spurs way back when. One of his primary moves is just getting around that screen, and if the defender, you know, goes over that screen and is positioned behind Maladone, he's going to bump you back with his rear end, create the space, and then he'll go. He's not like a De'Aaron Fox or an SGA where he's got that lightning fast speed or breakaway move. Not yet, he doesn't. He's not that fast as a player, so he has to kind of compensate for that, and he does it with all those decorated moves he already has as a 19-year-old. And I always talk about his offensive game on how he gets open. I think the passing game is still probably his best part, and he doesn't really show off those wacky passes anymore, so he's got a lot of room to grow. It's wild. So I think I read that he's like the 6th youngest player in the NBA, and Poku's the 1st. So much in those growth plates for him to improve. But just seeing him work like he has on the offensive end, just orchestrating the team at an all-star level damn near last night, it was just wonderful. And in that 4th, you can say that the minutes were kind of just throwaways, him scoring 14, whatever. That's not the case at all. There was actually kind of seeds of a comeback going on in that 4th quarter. Oklahoma City was shooting lights out. It just really came down to Charlotte being able to play, you know, all right to combat them. But yeah, I mean, he was lovely. Wasn't just the 25 points. Also had 5 rebounds, 5 assists. Had a crazy rejection on Cody Zeller. I think it was. He was right under the basket, Zeller was, for like a layup, close shot. I think Moses Brown was supposed to be on him. It was Brown or Bradley, one of the centers. He had a play up, so he was just left wide open. In Maladone, he was, you know, kind of hovering around the restricted zone in that free throw line, probably smack dab in the middle, so he had a lot of distance to cover. And you got Zeller on the left side of the rim, just about to hit an easy layup. He comes soaring in and gets another block on him. This is like vertically, like no funny business where it's kind of like a bang bang, people crashing into each other. Zeller is straight up like a damn pencil. And Maladone somehow made the distance, made the play, and just kept going like nothing happened. That is scary. That is scary from anybody but a 19-year-old who is a point guard, where he is not, you know, this is not just a one-off thing for him. He's been making wild blocks. Damn. It just tells you even more about, you know, what he could be for the team. So those two are great, even to the point that, you know, they set another record 5 days ago against Phoenix. They were the first pair of players under 20 to score 20 points in the same game. You got two 19-year-olds, well, in this game, become the first pairing of under 20-year-old teammates to have 25 in the same game. Both of them drop exactly 25 as well, so they just continue to add on to their collection. They got personal rookie records, at least, you know, in Maladone's case, he did. When it comes to Poku, he's building. They both have the resumes right now, and they just continue to emerge. I think they were amazing in this game. Maybe just like one slight hiccup that I would call out from the game, though. It came from the first quarter, and it came off of a Teo Maladone travel. Poku was like wide open, and Poku got the ball. He just slammed it against the ground, and you know, Maledon and Poku, they got checked out at the same time. And Mark Daigneault, you know, pulled him aside and was just barking at him. I mean, he has looked pretty calm this entire season. Like, he has just seemed like a laid-back coach, kind of a player's coach, letting everything kind of go together. He really wants the team chemistry to work and just everybody to like each other, and he's done that so far. He pulled over Poku, probably has been jawing out people in practices, but this is the first time I saw it in a game. Pulled him over, barking at him, pointing at him, just going at it. He said he was trying to speak Serbian to him on the sideline. I couldn't make out anything that he was saying. All you can really get the footage of is like a Bally Sports, I guess that's what you call it now, close up on like them for about 5 seconds. I couldn't make out what was going on. He just looked really mad though. So I think he was just telling him, you know, he probably has done the exact same stuff. Like, if Poku is going to get pissed at one travel, come on, man. Mark Daigneault, you know what he's going to do in the film room tomorrow? He's going to play all the Shaqt and the Fool stuff. He can make a whole mixtape out of that probably with some of the stuff he's done this year. So maybe just putting him back in a little bit of perspective here. Like, yeah, he was super hot in that first quarter, but you can't go lashing out your teammates for one silly play when, you know, everybody kind of has those moments. So I thought it was a great kind of piece from that game. As I talked about, Poku and Maledon killed it. But there's also Jalen Horde, who I thought did a pretty solid job. 13 points, that's another career high with him. You know, last game with 10 points, that was a career high. Might as well just keep building and building on it. He shot 4 of 6 to get there. He shot 1-3 on the game, and as I talked about, like, he spots up in that corner, but he's not the best shooter, and I'm not going to be like, oh, he missed 1-3, I told you so, but he got over there, chucked it. I think it left short a little bit, but yeah, after that one shot, he was just completely done with it. When he got the ball, he had his eyes locked in at going inside, creating some sort of havoc, whether it was a layup or just bumping into people to get to the free throw line. He was going to do whatever it took, and he did an amazing job at it. Played 24 minutes again, went 4 of 6, as I mentioned, really just all inside there. But the main part of his game, free throw shooting. And this is one where I'm seriously going to say, I told you so. This is my moment right now. I told you with the blue, probably his best part of his game was just getting to the line. I think he averaged 1.7 across those 15 games. But with Poku in and out of the rotation, everybody like Melvin Frazier Jr. bouncing in and out, he didn't have a stable spot. But whenever he was given the green light to attack the basket, he was getting foul calls every single time. Projected perfectly onto this game, the Hornets defenders could not stop him at 6'8", 218. He, you know, on the surface may just look like a stocky guy who you really don't need to take serious. You got to take him serious or he's dunking on you. Didn't have any posters in this game, but he got to the line, man. When those free throws that he made, hitting all 5 of them, he led the team in attempts. He played that SGA role almost, where he just drives in and gets foul call after foul call. Obviously, a little bit different with him, but, you know, you can kind of just make a really far-fetched intertwining between those two if you want to. When it came to getting rebounds, it wasn't really there in that last game, just not in the positions, I suppose. Only had 1 rebound, 1 assist. I thought he did great, though. And I think there are other people who really did the heavy lifting when it came to rebounding anyways. Had 46 as a team. Out-rebounded the Hornets by 4. They only had 42. And you saw guys like Poku going at it. He had 9 rebounds. Kenrich Williams had 9 rebounds. Moses Brown had 9 rebounds. Tony Bradley, he had 7 rebounds. So other people helped out. You know, when you look at Bradley, I thought he did another fantastic job. 12 points and 7 rebounds on 6 of 9 shooting. Just got to get to the weak side on screen setting plays and just kind of feast. He's been reaping the benefits there. Really just took Moses Brown's job almost. at least in the bench role he has, because Moses Brown has not looked that solid. It's cool, though, because, like I talked about, Bradley was cool. Justin Robinson was in his best game, shot 1 of 4, got 3 points on the night. Same with Ty Jerome. He only had 1 point he got from the line, shot 0 of 6 and 0 of 5 from downtown. He has been in a major funk when it has come to shooting the basketball this month. So hopefully he's kind of able to shed that off. He's shooting 16% right now in April, so he will need to kind of get back on a that level that we saw, you know, last month with those limitless threes. Kenrich Williams too. I mean, he has just been an inside out monster when it's come to shooting. Didn't shoot well in this one. This is probably one of his worst shooting nights as a Thunder player. Shot 2 of 12 as a starter, but he was still able to play 32 minutes, and he deserved every single one of those seconds that he was given by Dagnall. It's because he was helping out in other ways. Told you about the 9 rebounds. He had 9 assists. That's a career high for him. So, yeah, shooting, not happening with him. You just got to figure things out. That's kind of how Kenrich Williams has been as a player since day one with TCU. Not everything is given for you. And, you know, if you're feeling kind of a little bit down when it comes to how you're playing, find other ways to contribute. He's done that, sliding from the 2 to the 4 position at times, and now he's doing it again, not just as a rebounder whenever he's not doing so well in the point column, but being a playmaker. Also had 3 steals in the game as well. Svi had 12, so that kind of rounds out everyone who had double digits, I think, but one guy who was a little bit bad was Moses Brown. I think as a rebounder, he's done an amazing job, and just finding himself in great positions has also not been a problem. He's kind of had that Darius Bazley syndrome going on, where Bazley, you know, he would go in, give you that sidestep, the hop step, whatever he wanted to get the wide open layup, but he just couldn't finish it off. And that's what we've seen from Moses Brown. He only shot 2 of 8 in this game, shot 1 of 3 from the foul line, so he had 5 points, and he had 10 rebounds. But, yeah, I mean, the last game he was struggling against Stewart, struggling against Tyler Cook. In this game, PJ Washington was kind of standing him up. You also had Miles Bridges, and you had Cody Zeller playing off the bench, who somehow managed to get 15 points and 14 rebounds. So that was a little bit wonky. He looks like he aged about 8 years through last year's quarantine, by the way. He is like no hair on the top anymore. That was one of the better moments of the game, just seeing him check in, because I was like, whoa, what? Did not expect that at all. But yeah, Moses Brown, he's been good. I mean, it's just that kind of fact that he's not been able to finish the deal off. Like, he has been right around the basket, 1 foot beside that cylinder, and a vertical player. He just ends up throwing the ball too strong against the rim, and that's kind of all she wrote in terms of that. So he'll need to spike that up heading into the next game. In that next game, the Oklahoma City Thunder are going to be playing against the Cleveland Cavaliers, and they're going to be playing tonight at 7 p.m. So we're going to see another game where they're kind of two bottom dwellers in their respective conferences going up against each other. Cleveland, they're 18-32. OKC, as I talked about, they are 20-31 on the season. So on the surface, yeah, this might be a, you know, maybe I shouldn't watch this one, you know, because there's not going to be a ton of fireworks. I would actually go against that because they are pretty well matched right now. You know, the Cleveland Cavaliers are missing a couple big pieces in Larry Nance Jr. and Jared Allen. So it's going to be probably closer than these other games we've seen. But also the fact, I mean, they're only separated by 1.5 games for the lottery picks. So whoever wins here, that might end up being a pretty bad deal by the end of the season. Because I think when we're looking down to the next, what would it be? I think 21 games? Yeah, 21 games for the Thunder. They're probably going to do worse than the Cavaliers are going to do if we're going to expect that guys like SGA are out for a very long time. But that one game could seriously mean the difference between having like 50% odds of that number four pick, or, you know, even lower than that. I think the prime example would be like the 4 and 5 spots. You know, if you're pick number four entering the lottery, you have a 48% chance of making the top four. When you go to number five, that diminishes by almost 10%. You're looking at 39.9. So it's pretty big when you kind of go down in a number crunch. Slides a little bit when you drop from 5 to 6. 7 to 8 is in its own bracket too. So it means a lot. So is this a game that you're hoping the Thunder win? Mathematically, probably not. But seeing how Teo and Poku have been playing, you know, we could be due for a little bit of a treat. So getting a win here wouldn't be in the biggest harm ever. At least not in the short term, that is. But when we're looking at the game, I mean, I'm just excited to see everybody. We're going to have really the same exact injury report with our 6 to 7 guys. We'll see what happens on the day-to-days with all the concussion protocol players in. But, yeah, I mean, it's going to be a lot of young people. When it comes to the Cavs, kind of the same situation. Since they don't have Nance, since they don't have Jared Allen, and they don't even have Dylan Windler in the game, we should be set to see kind of some good matchups here. And I think my favorite, to be quite honest with you, would be coming from Moses Brown. And if it was going to be Moses Brown versus Jared Allen, I'd probably give a bit of the edge to Jared Allen because he's pretty big as a center and he's also pretty athletic. Like, he is known for rejecting the best of the best when they meet him at the rim. And with how Moses Brown likes to play, there'd be a lot of opportunities for him to do something like that. You just take that away. And when you look at the reinforcements they have at the center spot, it's really not that much. I mean, they have Isaiah Hartenstein, and that's it. If you want to try to promote someone like Kevin Love to the center spot, by all means, please do that. You also have Taryn Prince, but I don't think those guys would match up to a 7'1", 7'2", Moses Brown. So I think Moses Brown, he's kind of set to break out once again. This would be the best opportunity for him to do it. In the month of April, he's just not looked like himself. He's averaged 6.8 points, shot 38.5% so far. Rebound-wise, he's looked good, averaging 9, but you want to see him kind of go into the history books again, getting those 20 and 10 games on the year for him. So this is the best chance for him to do it, probably we're going to see for the next couple of weeks. So I want to see how they kind of duel off against each other. Also want to see how Maladone performs against the Cavaliers. You know, they already have their 1-2 punch in Sexland, Colin Sexton, and Darius Garland. So you're going to see both them kind of thrown up against Teo. And, you know, I want to see if his last game was legit. Like, it definitely, he has a lot of resume to him. But let's see if he can kind of create a long going streak to get him out of that tied for 10th place in the rookie ladder. That is still just a ridiculous call. I can't wait to see how they kind of advance up. And then when it comes to Poku, he's got to be on the ladder now. Like, there is no question about it. He's going to be playing up against Isaiah Okoro, most likely. You also got Chetty Osman at the other forward position. So I think it's also another game where we can see Poku kind of just do his best and maybe continue his little hot streak of scoring 15 plus points. But other than that though, guys, that is going to wrap up today's episode. I thank you all for listening, and I will talk to you all next time. See ya.